We'll start recording. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our next God's Grand Design. My name is Josh. I'm one of the pastors. We have two classes left tonight and in a couple weeks. This is part 13. We'll be digging into this question: did dinosaurs and people live at the same time? We're going to get into fossils. That's why we have all these fossils up here. How are they formed? How old are fossils? Where are the human fossils? And then in a couple weeks, we'll finish up. We'll talk about the Ice Age. How does that relate to migration of people and animals after the flood? And it's our last class. I have a few thoughts on where we go from here, but I would like to start with prayer. So, Lord, we thank you for tonight. We thank you for this class and how you've blessed it this last year. We ask that you would speak through me, that you would teach everyone here, that this would be a fruitful and productive time. Bless the teaching and our discussion. We say all this in your name. Amen. All right, so we are comparing our two views of origins. God created the heaven and earth 6 days, thousands of years ago. I think that view makes the most sense biblically and scientifically. View two, the heavens and earth evolved without God millions and billions of years ago. And then our flood paragraph, one more time. There was a time when the entire world was covered with water as a result of a year-long flood. This is a judgment from God on all human and land-dwelling life. It resulted in the death of all humans and animals who were not in the ark during the flood. So, dinosaurs are amazing. They're amazing creatures. People love learning about them in movies and shows and books and toys. They're remarkable creatures. Look at the size of these creatures. Look at that person there in the lower left-hand corner for scale. They're enormous. Some dinosaurs were as big as airplanes. That's a 737. That dinosaur would go from that wall to that wall, doubled. It's that big. It's unbelievable. And then speaking of ancient creatures that flew, here's some large flying prehistoric creatures. There's a person again on the lower left-hand corner for scale. And then there were ancient creatures, obviously, that lived in the ocean. Note again the size and the variety of creatures that lived in the prehistoric or ancient sea. I'll focus in on one, the megalodon, which is basically a giant shark. So there's a great white shark below it. There's a diver below it. There's a school bus. You can see the regular great white tooth compared to the megalodon tooth, or that's the jaw of the megalodon compared to a great white. They're enormous. I think we should start using school buses to measure distances. Like, how far did you throw that four school buses? And then here's some creatures that lived in North America during the Ice Age. Again, the size is remarkable. You can see the person on the left there to get an idea of scale. The third creature over, that's a sloth. There once were camels in North America. This is where we're going to go on the last class in 2 weeks, talking about the Ice Age. But amazing creatures lived on this planet, from the sky to the sea to the land, and for the most part, they're all gone. And the way we know about them is fossils. And again, we have fossils here from five different collections. Let me define fossil. It is a remnant, impression, or trace of an animal or plant of a past geological age that has been preserved in the Earth's crust. And so our question tonight is, did dinosaurs and people live at the same time? I'm going to focus in on dinosaurs, but this applies broadly to all of these creatures. Let's look at the conventional evolutionary timeline. So dinosaurs on an old Earth timeline supposedly lived between 245 and 66 million years ago. And these fossils are found in sedimentary rock layers that have been radiometrically dated. I'll point you back to some of our previous classes. So in class 6, we talked about radiometric dating and carbon-14 dating. Class 10, we talked about the geological column. Class 4, we talked about the origin of people. And so according to the evolutionary theory, the first people appeared on the scene about 250,000 years ago. And if dinosaurs supposedly went extinct about 66 million years ago, and people appeared on the scene 250,000 years ago, then the answer to this question, did people and dinosaurs live at the same time, would be no. But what if that's wrong? That's what this lecture is going to be about. So from a young Earth creation perspective, we have a different starting place biblically. I'll refer you back to two different classes. Class two, we talked about where did life come from. We got into the creation week. Class five, we talked about how old the earth was. We looked at the genealogies in Genesis. So before we answer this question, I want to review the key passages. So again, we're approaching this from a 1 week of creation, 6,000 years ago approximately. So in Genesis chapter 1, this is day 6 of the creation week. God made the beast of the earth according to their kinds, and livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. God saw that it was good. Next verse. That would have been the creation of the dinosaurs. Verse 26. God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heaven, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And God saw everything he had made. Behold, it was very good. There was evening, there was morning, the 6 day. So according to the creation account, God made the land creatures, the dinosaurs, and the people on the same day of creation, day 6. So a straightforward reading of Genesis chapter 1 is that God made the land creatures and the people at the same time on day 6 of the creation week. What about the flood? This is God talking again to Noah. He's telling him what animals to bring on the ark. We jump to Genesis chapter 6. Of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds according to their kinds, of the animals according to their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind, two of every sort shall come and shall into you to keep with them alive. So God told Noah to bring the dinosaurs, the land creatures, onto the ark. So that means that there were some dinosaurs that went onto the ark. Most were killed off by the flood, but some would have gone onto the ark. And so in the global flood, most of the birds and the land animals and the sea creatures were suddenly, rapidly, catastrophically buried in the flood, but some survived. Most would have died off during the flood. We watched that video a few weeks ago, talking about the Japanese tsunami and the mud flows and the debris flows. It would have been terrifying, imagining these debris flows bearing creatures all over the planet. So if there was a worldwide flood, what would you expect to see? To borrow a phrase, you would expect to see billions of dead things buried in rock layers all over the earth. And that's exactly what we find. There's a whole lecture here that I kept. If I do a future version of this class, I will add this lecture. But there's a whole lecture here on the logistics of the ark. How did they fit all the animals? How would you fit dinosaurs onto the ark? How would you care for them? How would you feed them? Is there enough room? That movie, The Ark in the Darkness, that many of you saw, I would put in my link, the link in my notes, but you can now order the DVD or you can stream it, and they get into that question. There's great answers to those questions, but if you want to dig deeper into it, there's some books and articles I could also refer you to. So in the old Earth evolutionary model, dinosaurs and people never lived at the same time. In the biblical young Earth creation perspective, they were created on the same day about 6,000 years ago. Some of them got onto the same boat about 4,500 years ago. But again, in the evolutionary model, we're talking about 66 million years ago, the dinosaurs went extinct. But on the creation timeline, people and dinosaurs lived together about 4,500 years ago. So that is a factor of about 15,000 between those two numbers. So we should be able to look at the evidence tonight and go, huh, is this millions of years or is this thousands of years? It's a factor of 15,000 that divides those two. Are these bones? Are these fossils that you can look at up here after class? Are we looking at things that are 66 million years old? Or are we looking at things that are 4,000 years old? So how do we know anything about dinosaurs or sea creatures or ancient land animals? We have their fossilized remains. We have impressions of their skin. We have their tracks that have been fossilized. So this one, let me show you this. So we've got up here a vertebrae from an Edmontosaur. It's right here. It's not mine. I borrowed it. So let's not touch it. I would like to not break this dinosaur bone, but you can touch all the other ones. They all seem pretty durable. So, but we have an actual Edmontosaur vertebrae. And the way we know that, how we learn it about the dinosaur is from these fossils. So I'm going to watch a 3-minute video that presents sort of the old Earth evolutionary perspective on fossils and dinosaurs. There are parts of this video that I would agree with, and there are parts that I would not agree with. But 3-minute video on fossils. Evolutionary view.
Millions of years ago, this dinosaur was going about its normal daily life. But his day went from good to bad. Really bad. After he died, other dinosaurs ate him. And the rest of his skin and muscles rotted away, leaving just his bones. These were quickly buried by mud. Over millions of years, more layers landed on top. Mud, sand, and even volcanic ash. This added up to a lot of weight on top of the skeleton. Some parts got crushed. The layers of mud, sand, and ash turned into hard, sedimentary rocks. While this was happening, water seeped into the bones. It left behind minerals, turning the bones to stone and creating a fossil. Earth changed a lot over millions of years. Rocks that were once deep underground rose to the surface, a process called uplift. Very slowly, wind, water, and ice wore away the rock. Eventually, bits of the fossil skeleton were exposed and became visible on the surface. Fossils are constantly getting eroded out of rock. Most are lost. But if we're lucky, someone will find one. Nearly all of the fossils we find, around 99%, are from marine animals, such as shellfish and sharks. This is because they lived in the sea, where sand or mud could bury their remains quickly after they died. But dinosaurs live on land, so how do they get buried so quickly? Most dinosaur fossils we find belong to animals that were living near to a lake or a river. They died, and a short while later the area flooded, covering the remains in mud and silt. Occasionally, something more dramatic happened. In one example, two dinosaurs, Protoceratops and Velociraptor, were fighting in the desert. They were mid-battle when, suddenly, a sand dune collapsed on top of them. Their fossils show them frozen in their fighting poses.
All right, so I'm going to show you a picture of that fossil. It's pretty amazing. So, in the evolutionary timeline, we're talking about slow, gradual processes over millions of years to create fossils. So, you remember in class 10, we talked about the geological column, how 75% of the continents of our planet are covered with a mile of water deposited or sedimentary rock. And those rock layers contain millions and billions of fossils that are generally in that order. It's the fossil record. It goes back supposedly 500 million years. 500 million years, we're told, of evolution, decay, disease, and death. It's a record of 500 million years of violence and death and disease in the evolutionary model. I've seen a number of fossils in my life. When we did that rafting trip in the Grand Canyon, there were marine fossils everywhere. There was like a sponge, a brachiopod, a crinoid, I forget what. That's Dr. Snelling's hand right there. If you just, that's pretty exciting, isn't it? Here's some more marine fossils. I forget what all these are. But they were just everywhere. Once I kind of saw an eye for them, I was like, well, here's a fossil, here's a fossil. They're just everywhere in the Grand Canyon. Obviously, there's dinosaur fossils all over Utah. This is my son, Aiden, when he was younger. Outside Moab, we went to Mill Canyon. And they have this area where there's this dinosaur bones that they've just left in the side of this cliff that you can just go up and touch. Here's Bill and I. When we did a pastor's conference in Denver, we took an afternoon and went over to the museum there and stood by some giant dinosaur bones. So our planet is covered with fossils. There are two very different perspectives. We're talking about either a slow, gradual process of burying and creating fossils over millions of years, or a sudden, catastrophic process that buried most of these fossils mainly in a one-year global flood. Again, we're talking about something that is supposedly 66 million years old or 4,500 years old. So the fossil record, is it 500 million years of evolution and death, or is it a burial record from the global flood. So what does the fossil evidence show us? Let's start getting into some evidence. So first, fossilization is actually incredibly rare. They said that in the video. There's a number of things that prevent fossilization, like if a deer falls and dies in the forest, at first it's scavenged by larger predators and then smaller predators, and then there's aerobic decomposers and anaerobic decomposers. You might go on a hike in the woods and you'll see some bones, a rib cage of an animal, but everything else has been picked clean, and eventually even the bones are weathered down and destroyed. Fossilization is very rare in the ocean as well. My family and I once watched that Blue Planet documentary. They followed a carcass of a whale. A whale died, the carcass sank to the bottom, and there are these same process, big scavengers, little scavengers, and eventually there's these, let's just watch a video. Here's some whale scientists, people excited about a dead whale.
This is a dead whale, which scientists recently discovered at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, covered in all kinds of creatures, from bone-eating worms to deep-sea octopuses. The bottom of the ocean is a desolate place. Normally, the only food you'll find there is what's called marine snow, tiny specks of organic material falling from the surface. And that's why there aren't many critters crawling or swimming at the bottom. But once in a while, the stuff falling from above is a lot bigger. Whale-sized, if you will. Whales, of course, are enormous, weighing up to 180 metric tons. So when they fall to the bottom, they can sustain entire ecosystems for years.
Just think the amount of calories in a whale here. I mean, the equivalent of so much marine snow, it's hard to even compare.
Oh, look at the blubber on the right side.
Yeah. It's not even digested all the way.
That's one of the 31 scientists aboard the exploration vessel Nautilus, a ship that explores the seafloor. In the fall of 2019, the crew came across this baleen whale, more than 3,000 meters down. And by the time they arrived, it was overrun with octopuses. More specifically, Moose Octopus robustus, a little-known purplish species that inhabits the deep sea. One even photobombed the camera. What's strange is that octopuses are predators. They don't usually eat dead tissue, which is why experts think they were feasting on other critters on top of the whale carcass, such as crustaceans or snails. They likely use the suckers on their tentacles to pick up their prey, and then carefully transfer them from sucker to sucker into their mouths. It's like a feeding conveyor belt. But if those octopuses look eerie to you, wait until you learn about the bone-eating worms called ossacks. There are so many of them here that it looks like the whale skeleton is coated in algae. These worms have no mouths and no guts. Instead, they secrete acid to dissolve bone. And then they rely on bacteria to do the rest.
So these are worms that have symbiotic associations with bacteria. So they have no more gut themselves. Instead, they have these rootlets that burrow into the bone, and then the bacteria are able to metabolize the fats and oils that are in the bone itself.
Wow.
In other words, they basically outsource digestion.
So basically, God has designed our world. So large scavengers, and then small scavengers, and then anaerobic and aerobic processes, and then eventually bone-eating worms just consume the entire carcass. So in order for a creature to be fossilized, you need to rapidly bury it, or scavengers and carnivores and aerobic decomposers and erosion, everything will just chew up and erode and consume the creature. It has to be rapidly buried or it will be devoured. And it can't just be a couple inches of soil. You have to bury it deep enough or actually it will decompose and bloat and float. You can't just like sprinkle dirt on a dead animal and it turns into a fossil. Scientists have actually studied what happens to dead animals. This is kind of gross. This is a dead alligator. So it dies, it bloats, it floats, it's decomposing, it dissolves, and then the bones sink down to the bottom. And now we know that there are worms that chew up the bones. So you have to bury a creature or even the bones deeply underground or you won't get a fossil. This is also interesting that I've learned in my study. You guys have noticed sometimes with dinosaurs especially, there's this dramatic head back position, this like arch position. They call it the death pose or death throes, science again. I think they drowned chickens, and they found that when chickens drown, they arch their neck back. I didn't do the experiment, I'm just passing along. But they discovered that when a creature is drowning, it'll like arch its neck and back, and so they find many dinosaurs that are in this death position, indicating that they were drowned. Bigo Joshua saw the video. We know it takes millions of years for this to become a fossil. Did you know that fossils can form very rapidly? Bristol University of England did a study. They found out that you could create a fossil in 24 hours. If you have enough pressure and enough heat, in one day, you can turn something into a fossil. You just need something that squeezes it, and it'll become a fossil. And so, I've been practicing geotechnical engineering for 20 years. I'll do a little math for you. So, a unit weight of soil, a cubic foot of soil. So, if you had a cube of soil that was 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot, it might weigh 120 pounds. If 5 feet of that soil was stacked on top of you, we're talking about 600 psf of pressure, 50 feet, 6,000, 500 feet, 60,000, 5,000 feet, 600,000 psf or 4,000 psi. Trench collapses are like the occupational hazard of geotechnical engineers. I actually know some guys who lost coworkers. They were in a trench, they shouldn't have been there, and the soil fell on them and it killed them. So, think about what we're describing here. In a global flood, you have a mechanism to drown all these creatures, to rapidly bury them under hundreds and thousands of feet of sediment, and this sediment generates incredible pressure and incredible heat, which could create fossils. Another thing, some thought things I want you to talk about, think about. In a slow, gradual evolutionary model, you would expect to find a dead animal here, and a dead animal there, and a dead animal there. And you find that in the geological column. You find individual fossils all over the place, but you also frequently find massive fossil graveyards. So you will find the solitary fossil, the individual fossil, but you find these mass graveyards all over the planet. And we have a bunch of these fossil graveyards here in Utah, because many of the dinosaur fossils are found in this layer, the Morrison Formation. What would you expect to find if this floodwaters, the Bible tells us they were advancing upward for 150 days, you would expect the larger, more mobile creatures to be moving up to the higher elevations, but eventually even they are drowned and buried. Like I said, Utah has some great dinosaur mass graveyards. We've got the Hanksville one, we've got the Cleveland one, we've got the Dinosaur National Monument. Has anybody ever gone to the Dinosaur National Monument? I need to go there. So look at this. This is a collection of descriptions of dinosaur mass graveyards. I want you to notice the theme here. In my notes, I put all of the sources. These are secular descriptions of mass dinosaur burial grounds. So at the top, it was a herd of dinosaurs which died in a flood or some other catastrophe. Next one, massive flood events may have killed thousands of dinosaurs at one time. 10,000 dinosaurs buried by a catastrophic inundation or flood. Hundreds of dinosaurs buried together with shark teeth. Dinosaurs, fish, and clams buried in a 100-yard-wide flood deposit. A large ancient flood washed over the starfish all at once, entombing them. Giant trees stripped and quickly buried by an ancient flood, and then hundreds of dinosaurs died in and were buried by flash floods. So there's these massive fossil graveyards all over the world, but a bunch here in our state where we have millions and billions of creatures transported great distances, their bones mixed up, catastrophically buried. This is the norm. This is not unusual. Again, you can look at my sources if you want to study this. And this brings up one head scratcher. Why would we have marine fossils on the continents buried with land animals? But that is found all the time. We have marine and land creatures buried together on the continents. This is the Messel Pit in Germany, for example, and they said that this area has birds, amphibians, reptiles, insects, fish, and mammals all buried together in this pit. There's another example of a marine creature that was buried on the continent. This is a few decades ago. They were building this highway here They were cutting into that rock layer, and they discovered 70 to 80 whale fossils up on the continent, buried together, all in one area. This is the paper if you'd like to study it. That guy right there, Arthur Chadwick, he is a young earth creationist. He was out there as a paleontologist studying this collection of 70 to 80 whale fossils. Another thing interesting that when we look at the fossil record, we notice that it has an indication of flow. Now think about it, the slow, gradual process, you would expect one nautiloid to die. You see that creature there, it's a nautiloid. We have an example of nautiloids here you could look at afterward. One would die and fall over there, one would die and fall over here. But the scientists that have studied this have noticed that there's a general flow pattern, like the water was flowing through this layer. So a few specifics on this nautiloid area. This area covers about 12,000 square miles. They estimate it has a billion nautiloids in it that were all living and buried at the same time. What would bury and kill a billion nautiloids at the same moment in time? That is a mystery to the slow and gradual model. It makes perfect sense in a catastrophic flood model, something that would bury a billion nautiloids. So this rapid burial by the flood would have buried animals that were dead, and it would have buried animals and killed them during the burial process. And again, we see examples of this. Here's the two fighting dinosaurs that video talked about, upper left. They're fighting, they're buried. Here's a fish eating a fish, buried. Here's two turtles mating, buried. Here's a dinosaur creature giving birth to a baby, buried. Which speaks of rapid catastrophic processes that killed and buried these creatures, like right in the middle of life. Have you ever walked along a beach and you've seen a dead jellyfish? Like it dies and it immediately, almost immediately starts to decompose. Upper right there, that's a decomposing jellyfish. And yet the fossil record is full jellyfish, 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 plus like sea crinoids, flower, wasps. You have all these creatures that were buried that have these delicate features about them that would very quickly break down or decompose unless they were rapidly buried. Think about footprints. This one's pretty interesting as we look at the fossil record. Footprints, or they call it tracks. What would you expect in a slow, gradual model? So if you walked along the sand here, you would not expect your footprints to last because the waves would come in and they would erode away your footprints. In order for your footprints to become buried and become locked in and become sediment, become a fossil, very quickly you would need another layer of sand or something to come over the top of that to seal that impression. So in a slow, gradual model, we would expect footprints or tracks to be very unusual, not common. They're found all over the place. Another interesting thing is that you would expect in the slow, gradual model, the footprints or the tracks would be at the same layer in the rock column as the creature. But that is not true. We find the creature buried at a higher rock layer than their footprints many times, indicating they were fleeing for their lives, trying to get to a higher elevation before they were buried and killed. When we were in the Grand Canyon again, Snelling stopped us here. He's talking about this slab. This is what he's standing in front of these footprints here. He pointed out a couple things to us about this. They think it's some sort of like reptile or rodent creature. One, it's not walking up the hill straight. It's at an angle, which is indicating it was fighting some sort of current. And then the tracks like lift up and then drop back in, like the creature was lifted off. The creature was like desperately trying to avoid getting drowned. It's like moving up this sandbank. The current is sweeping along. Here's a trilobite tracks. So those are, we saw those in the Grand Canyon. That's a trilobite on the right. We have the samples right down here. What is interesting is that the tracks of the trilobites right here are at a different level in the rock layer than you find the fossilized trilobites, which doesn't make sense in the slow gradual model. The same thing is true with dinosaur footprints. The tracks and the dinosaurs are at different levels in the geological column. That doesn't make any sense in the slow gradual model. I want to briefly talk about tree fossils. Obviously, there's polystrate trees. They're vertical trees that go through layers of rock that we're told are laid down over eons of time. And then again, when we were in the Grand Canyon, We saw this tree right here. You see that tree running right up through the middle there? That's a fossilized fern tree. I have a sample of the fossilized wood right here. Stelling told us that this tree, the leaves and the roots had been ripped off this tree. It was catastrophically defoliated, ripped off of its root ball, and then deposited and buried. And so when I see articles like this in the news, it catches my eye. This is CNN a couple months ago. I put the link to the article in my notes. Rare ancient tree discovery has scientists gobsmacked. Gobsmacked, that's an awesome word. We should all use that this week. So look what gobsmacked these scientists. One of the specimens they discovered is among a handful of cases in the entire plant fossil record, spanning more than 400 million years, in which a tree's branches and crown leaves are still attached to its trunk. You see what that is saying? All over this entire planet, the vast majority of the trees that they find fossilized do not have their branches and do not have their leaves. That sounds like a catastrophic process to me. What about, let's address the question that you guys have asked me over and over and over again. Let's talk about, where are the human fossils? You have dinosaurs and people lived at the same time, Josh. Shouldn't we find their fossils together? Wouldn't that be amazing if you found like a T-Rex fossil right by a person? You'd be like, mic drop, boom, end of discussion. As I've read and studied over the years, most creation scientists think we have not found a genuine human fossil with a dinosaur yet. We go, if that's true, then where are the human fossils? I have four thoughts for you very briefly. First, God said that he would wipe the people off the face of the earth. It says in Genesis 6, when God was warning Noah, he said, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. The word destroy here in Hebrew means to corrupt. God is saying they have corrupted or ruined the earth, and so I'm going to corrupt or ruin them. So God may have apparently just wiped people off the face of the earth as some sort of divine judgment, even their bones. Second, we tend to think that the flood killed off millions of people. But recently I read this verse in Leviticus a couple days ago. God said, speaking of his judgment, this is not related to the flood, but it's a principle. I will let loose the wild beasts against you, which shall bereave you of your children and destroy your livestock and make you few in number so that your roads will be deserted. So God says that when people are wicked, he reduces their population. So there may have been less people on the planet before the flood than we think. It even says in Genesis that violence filled the earth at this time. And third point, when we visualize the flood, we tend to think of that like 500-foot tsunami sweeping across the continent. But again, the Bible tells us it took 5 months for the floodwaters to max out. People would have been moving higher and higher. People are smart. If the floodwaters came up from California over 5 months, we would be moving higher and higher and higher. And in that case, we wouldn't be buried and fossilized because we'd be the last to drown. Fourth one, this is also sobering to think about. There are massive layers of rock on the planet that are calcium phosphate. Our bones are made of calcium phosphate. So there are layers in the geological column of the same components that are in bones. So there may be layers on this planet that are the ground up remnants of bones, which is pretty sobering. So this would be my very brief answer to this question. Where are the human fossils? God promised to wipe people off the face of the earth. There may have been less people than we tend to think. People moved to higher ground over the 150 days of advancing water, thus avoiding burial. And massive phosphate layers may be the remnants of their bones. But it is a good question. It's a faith thing. I would be happy to send you more resources if you want to study that more. So let's pivot to evidence of if fossils are young or old. Again, we're talking about something that's 66 million years old or 4,500 years old. So Dr. Mary Schweitzer, she's a paleontologist. In 2005, she was looking at a T-Rex femur, and it's supposedly 70 million years old. It's from Hell Creek, Montana. And she found that the tissue in the bone was soft and stretchy. It was not mineralized. It was not fossilized. It was blood vessels and blood cells. she noticed that there was this, she called it a cadaverous odor, like a dead, rotting odor. She mentioned this to a paleontologist, Jack Corner. He said, oh yeah, all of the Hell Creek bones smell. So it's 70 million year old bones, supposedly, and they're examining it, they're working through it, like it smells like death in these bones. These are not young earth creations, for the record. So this is what she said when she found the red blood cells in the dinosaur bone. She said, I just got goosebumps because everyone knows these things don't last for 65 million years. She went on, she said, when you think about it, the laws of chemistry and biology and everything else that we know say that it should be gone. It should be degraded completely. Other paleontologists refused to accept her findings. She said this, I had one reviewer tell me that he didn't care what the data said. He knew that what I was finding was impossible. I wrote back and said, well, what data would convince you? He said, none. She is not a young earth creationist. So I want to play a couple minute video. This is Del Tackett talking to Dr. Kevin Brown. He is a young earth creationist. He's talking about a Triceratops fossil.
Well, Kevin, what did you find then when you were looking at the sample and you actually found some tissue?
Okay, here's what we found. Here we have a piece of the horn that has been decalcified, like what I just showed you over on the bench. Mark Armitage was our microscopist working on this, and Mark then took a piece of the decalcified horn and put it under a microscope. See the fibrous material there? That's part of the composition of the bone matrix itself. But what's really of interest is see the white material here on the surface swaying back and forth? That's actual dinosaur tissue on the surface. See, this is not a solid fossil. This is got tissue characteristic to it. See, notice how it flexes back. That's, of course, very interesting how you pull on it, flexes back, pull on it, flexes back. That's characteristic of tissue. That's what tissue would do. Now, Mark then was able to extract some very thin layers of elastic material away from the inner core of the horn. But he didn't have to decalcify the horn in order to do this. You can see it's stretchy, it's flexible. In fact, look, notice, see how it's stretching? It's stretching almost twice its original size of what it was. See, this again is original dinosaur tissue that he's peeled directly from the fossil. There was no decalcification that he did first. See, this is how accessible this tissue was. He didn't have to remove any fossilized bone to get to this tissue.
It's pretty remarkable. So since 2005, now that scientists are looking for this soft tissue, there's been approximately 100 to 120 examples of soft tissue that has been now found in dinosaur bones that are supposedly 70 million years old. We're talking about cell structure, we're talking about blood vessels, blood cells, collagen, cartilage, all of this tissue that is soft and pliable. So again, we're told it's 70 million years old, maybe 4,500 years would be a better number. So does the Bible talk about dinosaurs? What is thought to be the oldest book in the Bible? Job. It's about 2000 BC. So this would have been about 400 or 500 years after the flood. Job, God appears to Job and he's describing his power in creation. And he culminates with the behemoth and the Leviathan. So Job 40, God's describing a creature. He says, behold, the behemoth, which I made as I made you. He eats grass like an ox. Behold, his strength is in his loins, his power in the muscles of his belly. He makes his tail stiff like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are knit together. His bones are tubes of bronze. His limbs are bars of iron. He is the first of the works of God. Let him who made him bring him near his sword, for the mountains yield food for him, where all the wild beasts play. Under the lotus tree plants he lies, in the shelter of the reeds and in the marsh. For his shade the lotus trees cover him. The willow of the brook surrounds him. Behold, if the river is turbulent, he is not frightened. He is confident, though the Jordan rushes against his mouth. Can one take him by his eyes or pierce his nose with a snare? So this is describing some massive creature with a tail like a cedar. In your Bible, if you read the footnotes, it might say a large creature, exact identity unknown. Some of my Bible commentaries say maybe it was a hippopotamus. Maybe it was an elephant, but I put them up here in these pictures so you can notice their tails are definitely not like cedar trees. That woman is standing beside a cedar tree. This is a helpful illustration because you'll see a creature there that is massive, that a flooding river would not scare, that does have a tail that is like a cedar tree. Some of my commentaries are brave enough to use the D word, dinosaur. But others are like hippo, elephant, and some even call it a mythical creature. Like, how is God going to prove I'm so incredible, I'm so powerful, I made all these things, and now let me tell you about something that's made up that's not real? That doesn't make a lot of sense. And he describes it, and Job has seen it. He's talking about it in the Jordan. Now I'm going to go, and you guys are like, whoa, now we're going to go to some really deep water. So, if dinosaurs were on the ark, and they walked off the boat, and dinosaurs and people interacted in the last 4,000 years, what would you expect to see? You might expect to see records of that in art. This might all be made up. I'm just showing it to you. You can decide. So, this is in Utah. This is Natural Bridges National Monument on the left. There's this big, huge arch thing. And you zoom in, and there's that creature there. What is that? What did those ancient people draw there? Here on the right, this is from the Book of Hours in Europe hundreds of years ago. This is St. George fighting, everybody says, a dragon. Those aren't dinosaurs. It's just fictional things. Here's another one. This is on the left. This is a late Hellenistic mosaic. What creature are they fighting? What is that thing that they're facing there? On the right, this is from Peru. Here's a petroglyph in a cave. Here's a bunch of hunters gathered around some creature that they're fighting. I'm sure it's all just made up. I'm just showing you. You can all just chew on it and think about it. Here's two more examples. This is Angkor Wat, Cambodia temple. This is stonework in this temple from 800 AD. What's this thing? And then right here on the right, this is in Carlisle Cathedral in England. There's this burial engraving, a dog, a fish, a bird. There's two creatures there. This is before we were digging dinosaur skeletons out of the ground and putting them in museums. These are concepts that were not part of common knowledge back then. What killed off the dinosaurs if they lived with people after the flood? Maybe they were hunted. Apparently they were hunted in a lot of these photos. Maybe different climate, different vegetation. If you want to dig deeper into this subject of dinosaurs, I brought two books, Dire Dragons and Titans right here. You could glance through them. These are books worth reading if you want to study it. I want you to look at my copies. So we're going to end with this. So the fossil record, is it 500 million years of evolution and death, or is it a burial record from a global flood? We've looked at the evidence. Some Christians believe that the fossil record is 500 million years of disease and death and thorns and struggles and suffering, and then God put Adam and Eve on top of all of that, and they said, it's all good. This is very good. And then I want to end with this verse. Don't forget that Jesus believed in the flood. We've now read this verse. This is Matthew 24. Jesus said, as were the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. So he's again linking it to his return. In those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage until the day when Noah entered the ark. They were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. So will be the coming of the Son of Man. When two men will be in a field, one will be taken, one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, one will be left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming. So Jesus Christ believed the flood happened. He linked it to his return and future judgment. So, amen. We're done. Let's discuss these questions for 15 minutes. Thank you.